Okay. Okay, before we start today, today is the 30 days since the passing of Ruth's mother, Bluma Leah, Bat Rav Shmuel Yosef. So we're going to dedicate today's shir in the memory of her neshama. Of course, wish Ruth and her whole family arichas yamim and only good things. And Ruth brought in some food, so please make a bracha, and the bracha that you make on the food obviously is also for the elevation of her neshama. And as Chazal tell us, that when there's an elevation of an soul, aliyat neshama, that generates bracha for the whole family and for everyone. So only bracha, only simcha. Okay, so today's parsha is Vayetze. Parsha Vayetze is page 144. Action-packed parsha. It's a parsha that's really special in a way to us because it's all about Yaakov. We've had Avraham and Yitzchak. This parsha is about Yaakov. Now, of course, Yaakov, our father, has a special connection to us. The Bnei Yisrael, the Jewish people, are called Bnei Yisrael. The reason we're called Bnei Yisrael is because we are the sons of Yisrael, Yaakov. Yaakov's second name or other name was Yisrael, right? Sometimes in the Torah we refer to as Beis Yaakov, like before Matan Torah, before the giving of the Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu, was told by Hashem that this is what you should say to the Beis Yaakov, the house of Yaakov, and tell the Bnei Yisrael. So we'll soon see why we have a specific connection to Yaakov more than, in a way, more than Avraham and Yitzchak. And some of this actually is very much emphasized in the first pasuk. We'll come to it in a minute. Let's have a look at the first few pasukim first of all. So the pasuk, the parsha begins with a continuation of last week's parsha, where Yaakov stole the brachos, he stole the blessings. Esav then schemed and plotted to kill Yaakov. Rivka decided to make sure that Yaakov escapes, speaks to Yitzchak. They both call Yaakov, they bless Yaakov, and they tell him to go and find a wife elsewhere, not where he was. And so he leaves. In the middle, we have an interruption where Esav decides to take a new wife because he sees that the daughters of Canaan are not favorable to Yitzchak and Rivka. So he takes a new wife from the daughters of Yishmael. He doesn't divorce his first wife, he just keeps the Canaan wife, but he adds a new wife. Torah interrupts with that narrative and then goes back to Yaakov traveling and starts again and says, "Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Shava." Yaakov went out from Be'er Shava, "Vayelech Charana," and he went to Charan. Charan was the place of Lavan, his uncle, and he's going to try to find a wife there. All right. Let's learn a few pesukim and then we'll come back. "Vayifka ba'mokim," he encountered the place. The place he's talking about is the place of the Beis Hamikdash, Mount Moriah, Temple Mount. "Vayolen shom," he slept there. "Kivo Hashemesh," because the sun was setting. "Vayikach ma'avne hamokim," he took from the stones of the place. "Vayosem mirah shoysov," and he placed it around his head. "Vayishkav mokim hu," and he lay down there. Right? Chazal tell us, the Farshim say this was the first time that he'd slept. What actually happened was, when he left Rivka and Yitzchak's house, he made a detour. He went to Yeshiva for 14 years. Right? The Yeshiva of Shem Ve'Aver, he sat and learned Torah. Didn't lay down during that time. He dozed off, but never properly went to sleep because he was so engrossed in Torah study. And then he leaves and he comes to this place and he lies down. It was the first time in 40 years he actually lay down properly. It was also going to be the last time in the next 20 years, because when he was taking care of Lavan's sheep, he also hardly slept. He was so diligent and dedicated to his job that he never slept properly on the job. He slept, but not properly. Right? That's what it means. Vayachalam, and he has a dream. Vehinei sula mutzav arza. The ladder was rooted on the ground. Veroishay magia shamayma. Its head was reaching the heavens. Vehinei malachei elokim. Behold, the angels of God. Oilim v'yordim boy were going up and coming down. Vine Hashem nitzav alav, and Hashem standing upon him ayom, and he says, "Ani Hashem alakei Avraham avicha, I am God, the God of your father, Avraham of your father. Yitzchak and the God of Yitzchak, Ha'aretz, the land, Asher Ata Shoichem Ulel, that you are laying upon, L'cha Etenena Ulezarecha, I will give it to you and to your children. Promised in the land of Eretz Yisrael. V'yazarecha Ka'afar Ha'aretz, your children will be like the dust of the earth. U'foratzta Yom Avakeinu Atzafayinu V'negva, and you will spread out east, west, north, south. V'nivruchu V'cha Kol Mishpchei Sadama V'zarecha, and with you be blessed all of the families of the earth and with your children. Okay. And he promises him, he'll protect him, he'll come back, etc., etc. What actually happened was, it says he vayifka v'makom, he chanced upon this place. Mefarshim tell us, Rashi brings it down, he davened, right? Chazal tell us that he davened Ma'ariv. Because we know that Avram Avinu made Shachris, Yitzchak made Mincha, because by Avram Avinu it says he got up early in the morning to daven. Yitzchak, it says when Rivka was coming, he says he went out into the field to daven, that was in the afternoon when evening was coming. And then it says over here that the sun had set and Yaakov davened, so that's the davening of Ma'ariv. So those are the three tefillahs, the three prayers that we have every day, correspond to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Where did he just come from? Like I said, he just come from 14 years in the yeshiva. So one of the things we learn from here is that Yaakov was on the way to Choron, right? Choron was where his uncle lived, but Choron was called Choron for a reason. The commentaries tell us Choron was called Choron because it stands from the word Charoin. Charoin af shomokam, the anger of Hashem. It was the most immoral, evil place. And Yaakov was about to go there, and he's going to establish a family there, and he's going to have to be spiritually protected there for 20 years. So it teaches us a lesson. Before you go to an environment that's not so spiritually protected, one has to prepare. And Yaakov prepares by learning Torah and by davening. Those two things, right? Spends years in yeshiva first, he learns Torah, he absorbs the values of Torah, and then he davens. And only after those two preparations can he actually continue and go to Choron. Yeah? Okay. Now, let's have a look at the first pasuk again, just for a minute. It says, Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Shava. Yaakov went out from Be'er Shava and he went to Choron. So the commentaries also all ask the question, the Farshim asked the question, why do we need this extra expression, he went out of Be'er Shava? We already know that he left his parents. He left his parents already in last week's parsha. All the pasuk wants to tell us now, he wants to pick up from where we left off before and continue on the story of how he now continues on to Choron. Right? So why is it necessary for the Torah to emphasize and Yaakov left the Be'er Shava? And he went to Choron. What did you say? Vayelech Yaakov Chorona. And Yaakov went to Choron. The purpose of the story is his destination. It's not so relevant where he's coming from. The purpose of the whole story is to tell us where he went to, the marriage to Rachel and Leah that we're going to deal with soon, and the giving birth to all the tribes, to most of the tribes, right? So why does he need to say, Vayetze Yaakov Be'eshova, and Yaakov came out, he went out from Be'eshova. So Rashi says, just to teach us something, Rashi says an interesting pshat, based on the Medrash, that to teach us that when a tzaddik lives in a place, any environment that a tzaddik is found in, that is the glory, that is the beauty, and the radiance of the place. When a tzaddik leaves a city, it makes a mark. The glory, the radiance, the splendor of the city leaves. And that's what the pasuk means by telling us, Vayetze Yaakov Be'eshava. Yaakov didn't just go to Chora. Yaakov left Be'eshava. When Yaakov left Be'eshava, it was a different Be'eshava. Right? So that's to teach us that, that's according to the pshat, that's why it says, Vayetze Yaakov Be'eshava. But the Medrash, there's an interesting Medrash. The Medrash says that the reason that the pasuk says Vayetze Yaakov Be'er Shava is to emphasize what Yaakov was running away from. He was running away from something. He wasn't just going to Choron. He was leaving Be'er Shava. So the first thing the Medrash says is this. The place was called Be'er Shava, right? Says the Medrash that Yaakov was running away mi Be'era shel Shavua. He was running away from the well of the oath. Sheva comes the word Shavua. Why the well? The Mepharshim explained in the Medrash, Be'era means the depth, the secret. Yaakov was escaping the secret of the Shavua, of the oath. What oath? What oath are we talking about? So the Medrash brings two explanations. I'll do it out of order, because I just want to focus on the second one. First one is that he had made a deal with Esav. He had stolen the blessings, right? Part of the legalities of Yaakov stealing the blessings, stealing the bracha, was the fact that he had sold the birthright to Esav, right? He had sold the birthright to Esav. Now, when he sold the birthright to Esav at the beginning of last week's parasha, he had made Esav swear, and it says Vayishav Allah. Esav swore that he had sold him the birthright, right? Yaakov was now and it was on that basis that Yaakov stole the brachas. Yaakov was now worried that Esav would suddenly come up and start legally challenging the validity of his oath. Maybe he was forced, maybe his circumstances were beyond his control, and he might want to find a way to undo that oath. Undoing the oath would then compromise Yaakov's position in terms of the brachas, right? So Yaakov was running away from the secret of the Shvuah, Be'erosh al Shvuah. He was running away from the secret of the Shvuah. He didn't want any challenge to his Shvuah, to his oath. And therefore he was running away to avoid confrontation and to avoid a challenge to the Shvuah, to the oath that was taken over the birthright. Right? That's the one pshat the Medrash says. Another pshat the Medrash says is a very interesting pshat. That Yaakov was running away Be'erosh al Shvuah, from the secret of the oath, the oath of Avimelech. You might remember, previously in the Torah, we didn't do it in the mornings, but we might remember that there was a story in the Chumash twice, where Avram and Yitzchak both have a dialogue with Avimelech. And they both take an oath. They make a pact with Avimelech. Right? One shouldn't harm the other one's wells, the other one shouldn't harm the descendants. Right? There was a bit of tension between Avram Avinu and Avimelech, between Yitzchak and Avimelech. And they end up making a shvuah, which is one of the reasons that the place is called Be'er Sheva, because of the shvuah. Because, in fact, I think the pasuk says it clearly: "Gisham nishvu u'shneim." Right at the end of Chayesar, I think it's correct. One second. Or the end of last week's parasha. I don't know exactly where it is, but one place says that they made a shvuah. That's what was called Be'er Sheva. Now, Yaakov didn't want, says the Medrash, Yaakov didn't want to be in the position to also have to enter into a pact with Avimelech and make another oath. Why? Because Yaakov said that when Avram Avinu made an oath with Avimelech, he delayed the ownership of Eretz Yisrael by the Jewish people for 7 generations. Okay? From Avram Avinu till Moshe Rabbeinu is 7 generations. Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Levi, Amram, Kohos, Moshe, whatever. 7 generations, right? By giving in to Avimelech, so to speak, by giving Avimelech some sort of credibility, he gave him a bit of a hold on Eretz Yisrael, land of Eretz Yisrael, and that delayed the Jewish people till Moshe Rabbeinu. 7 generations. And it was at that time where the intention was that the Yidden would then have ownership over Eretz Yisrael in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. Now we know that didn't actually happen. It actually worked out that it was a generation later. They went into Eretz Yisrael in the generation of Yehoshua. Why? Said Yaakov, that's because Yitzchak entered into a pact with Avimelech. So then, because Yitzchak entered into a shul with Avimelech, according to the Mefarshim and the Medrash, those are the Pshat and the Medrash, that delayed one more generation and then became 7 generations, not from Avram Avinu, but from Yitzchak Avinu. And therefore it ended up that the Yidden ended up staying in the Midbar an extra generation of 40 years and ended up only going to Eretz Yisrael with Yehoshua, a generation later. Says Yaakov Avinu, I'm going to have to now enter into a pact with Avimelech. If I stay here, there's going to be tension. We're going to again make a shvuah, again an oath. That's going to delay the entering into the Eretz Yisrael by my descendants one more generation. It's going to be 7 generations from me. So he didn't want that. So Vayetze Yaakov Ve'eshav. Yaakov leaves Ve'eshav. He leaves the secret of the shvuah. He leaves the possibility in entering into a shvuah with Avimelech. Okay? The obvious question is, what does it mean? If Avram and Yitzchak had to make a shvuah with Avimelech, obviously it wasn't so bad. If it was a problem for them to make a shvuah with Avimelech, how come Yaakov was allowed to get away with it? Or was it a trick? You're going to trick Hashem kind of thing? Secondly, if if it was wrong to make a shul with Avimelech, if it delayed the entering into Eretz Yisrael of the Jewish people by seven generations, so why did they do it? Right? So one of the explanations is that this actually, and this gives a bit of insight to the whole idea of Yaakov, the uniqueness of Yaakov. Yaakov in Chazal is referred to as Bechir Sheba Avos, the choicest of the forefathers. Right? Why? Because we know that there's a big difference between Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. It says that Avram Avinu Yotza Mimenu Yishma. Avram Avinu was an unbelievable tzaddik. He had Yitzchak, but nevertheless he had another son that went off. Yotza Mimenu, came out of him. There was an element of Avram Avinu that wasn't completely perfected and purified, and therefore there was an element, an aspect of Avram Avinu that was able to deviate and go off and come out of the world of Avram Avinu, and that was Yishma. Right? Yitzchak Avinu Yotza Mimenu Esav, it says. Esav came out of him. In other words, Yitzchak Avinu wasn't at the complete level of perfection. That in his world there was an aspect of Esav that could come out and exit and be out of the whole realm and the world of Yitzchak. Right? Well, when it comes to Yaakov, Yaakov is different. Yaakov, we know, is Mitosei Shleima, we are called. His bed was perfect, meaning all his children were tzaddikim. And in fact, that works with Kal Yisrael that way, right? We come from Avraham Avinu, but others come from Avraham Avinu too. In other words, other nations come from Avraham Avinu as well. It wasn't only Eden. We come from Yitzchak, but so do other nations. Because there was a part of Yitzchak that got channeled off to other places. So Yaakov, it wasn't that way. Yaakov, his whole divine energy was only into Eden, only into Bnei Yisrael. That's all of his children became a Shvatim. All of his children became part of Am Yisrael. Yeah? That has to do with a lot of different aspects. Partly it's got to do with
what we call Bnei Yisrael.
Exactly, Bnei Yisrael, before, yeah, Bnei Yisrael and Beis Yaakov. The two terms that are
that's what, name.
Yaakov and Yisrael, two names for the same person, right, correct. And that's why we have a specific connection to Yaakov more than to Yitzchak and Avraham Avinu. Correct.
All the tribes and they were
all of them tzaddikim. Some of them made mistakes, they got admonished by Yaakov, you know, later on in the Sefer Bereishis, but they were all part of the fold, they were all part of Am Yisrael. Different to Yitzchak and Avraham. Part of the reason is because we know also that Yitzchak, Avraham and Yitzchak represented two extreme, we've spoken about this before, two extreme middas. Avraham represented chesed. Yitzchak represented gevura, right? Extreme chesed, extreme gevura, doesn't work. Yeah, then eventually it channels out to non-pure chesed or non-pure gevura. Yaakov was tiferes, Yaakov was emes, we are called, right? Yaakov is called the synthesis, the balance between the two, the harmony between Chesed and Gevura. That's why the word Emes is synonymous with Yaakov. Why? Because Emes, truth, we say, Titein Emes Le Yaakov, the Pasuk says. Because truth has no escape. Truth must always last. Something that's true means that it applies at all levels. If it works here but doesn't work here, it's not totally true. Right? Truth means it's got to work all over. That's why the Just on a side, that's why Emes has the letters of Aleph, Mem, Tov. Aleph, the first of the Aleph base, Mem is the middle of the Aleph base, and Tov is the last of the Aleph base, because Emes must run right through. Right? Whereas Sheker, falsehood, has three letters, Shin, Kuf, Resh, right next to each other. They don't apply to the rest of the Aleph base. It doesn't absorb the rest of the Aleph base. The same thing, Stam, on this topic, is you know that Emes has the Gematria. There's a gematria in Hebrew called Mispar Kotam. Mispar Kotam means it's a different form of gematria, where you take away the zeros and you add up the digits, right? You bring it down to a single digit, right? So the Mispar Kotam of Emes is 9, right? 1 and 40 and 400. So you knock off the zeros, becomes 1, 4, and 4. Add it together is 9, right? What's unique about the number 9? It's the number of Emes. Because as much as you'll multiply the 9, you'll always be able to add together the digits and all end up with 9. Always. You know? Right? 12 times 9 is 108. 108, 8 and 1 is 9. Etc. And infinitum. Right? It'll always end up with 9. Sorry?
That's what said that we choose the mathematicians.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
Right? So that's the mid of Emes. What this also means is this. That Yaakov was able to achieve. Yaakov stands for something that Avraham Avinu and Yitzchak were not able to achieve. And that is that Yaakov stands for the complete transformation of evil into good. That's why he was able to go to Haran and survive there. Avraham Avinu had to leave Ur Kasdim and go to Eretz Yisrael. Yitzchak was never allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael. Yaakov was able to go back to Haran and sort of in Haran transform the environment and give birth to the Shvatim, right? Avraham Avinu and Yitzchak Avinu weren't distracted by evil, but they weren't able necessarily to completely transform the evil. And that's why in their world, evil still had a place. That's why in Avraham Avinu's world, Yishmael can still be born. In Yitzchak Avinu's world, Esav can still be born. Yaakov represents the complete transformation of evil. In his world, evil has no place. Right? That's why Avraham Avinu and Yitzchak were able to and had to have a dialogue with Avimelech and make a pact with Avimelech. They were able to make peace with Avimelech. They were able to not be distracted by the impurity of Avimelech, but yet weren't able to transform Avimelech. And therefore, in their world, Avimelech still existed. And that's why in the world of Avraham and Yitzchak, Avimelech can still have a place, and Avimelech can still delay the entering into Eretz Yisrael of the Jewish people by 7 generations. But not in Yaakov in his world. Yaakov in his world stands for complete purity. So that's what it means by Yetze Yaakov in Be'er Shava. Yaakov goes away from Be'er Shava. This wasn't a trick, it was what he stood for, what he was. Yaakov stands for the world where Avimelech doesn't exist. Not even peacefully. There is no Avimelech. We transform Avimelech. And therefore, in Yaakov Avinu's world, there can be no further delay into the entering of Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, in Yaakov Avinu's world, in his context, there's no Shvur, there's no oath of Avimelech. And that's the pshat. Yaakov leaves Be'er Shava. He leaves the secret of the Shvur. There is no Shvur, there is no pact with Avimelech. Okay? Just before we go further, the same Medrash brings another pshat, Be'er Sheva, that not translating the word Sheva as Shvua, but translating Sheva as 7, number 7, right? And Medrash says like this, interesting Medrash, Medrash says that Yaakov left Be'er Sheva, he left and he didn't want to be challenged with the brachas, he didn't want to undermine the brachas, for which were connected to the number 7, right? And he said, because I don't want to compromise the brachas, says the Medrash, I don't want to lose that effort that my mother worked for. So the commentaries of the Medrash say, what does that mean? So one of the Mefarshim of the Medrash says the following, that Rivka got Yaakov the brachas, right? To do that, she had to do 7 things, and it lists the 7 things. She had to make food for Yitzchak, she had to take the clothes, and she had to dress Yaakov, she had to put on the skin, she had to put on the skin on his neck. It says in the thing, she had to give Yaakov the food to give to Yitzchak, she had to give him the bread. Anyway, it lists 7 things that Rivka had to do to get Yaakov the brachas. So that's what it means. Vayetze Yaakov be'er Sheva. Yaakov leaves the secret of the Sheva. He leaves the whole environment where the brachas were achieved through the number 7, because he don't want to compromise that effort that his mother put in with the hat which was connected with the number 7 and compromise the getting of the brachas. So those are different pshatim on what it means. Vayetze Yaakov be'er Sheva. Okay. Let's move on. So Yaakov goes there. He's looking for a wife. And he's at the well. Right? We know that wells are good places for shidduchim. Yeah, there were three. What's that?
It's a few wells. What?
Well, right, yeah, so I know it's far more wells, right? No, who gets the shidduch at a well? Eliezer finds Rivka at a well. Yaakov finds a shidduch at a well. Moshe Rabbeinu finds a shidduch at a well. Story later on, Moshe Rabbeinu, when he went and he was running away and he went to Midian, and he met the daughters of Yisroi, and one of them was Tzipora, who he later married, that was at a well. Right? What's that?
The beach is a
good place. I don't know about the beach, the well. Yeah, I'm not sure the beach, but the well for sure. Okay. So he goes there, and there's shepherds there, the whole business. Okay. Now, we'll just skip over a little bit, and then Rachel comes out, and he cries, and then Lavan comes out. Lavan comes out because he thought Yaakov had come with a lot of wealth. Because Lavan remembered Eliezer coming with 10 camels, so he ran. He figured, well, maybe there's more to come. He comes out, he's utter dismay. Yaakov is there with absolutely nothing. Kisses him, he hugs him. Rashi says he hugs him because maybe he's hiding some jewels in his jacket. Kisses him, maybe he's got some precious stones in his mouth. Who knows what he's, you know. It's like today, you know, you read of people hide drugs in their stomach and it's like that. So maybe he thought, who knows, but maybe Yaakov's hiding something. Anyway, he's disappointed, but bottom line, he acts nice, and he says to Yaakov, come, you're my cousin, my family, my nephew actually, stay with me. Then the post says the following, have a look on page 150. 150 pasuk tes zayin, pasuk 6:15. Yep. 16, sorry. Ulalavan shtei bonos. Right? Lavan had two daughters. Shem hagdoila Leah. The bigger one, the older one, was Leah. Shem hakatana Rachel. The name of the older one was Rachel. Ve'ena Leah rakos. The eyes of Leah were tender. She had teary eyes. She was reserved. She was withdrawn. Ve'Rachel hoisa yefastoyer. Rachel was beautiful, v'yifei marim. She looked, you know, nice looking. Says the pasuk, Ayeyav Yaakov is Rachel. Yaakov loved Rachel. Yomer, and he said to Lavan, Ivatcha sheva shalim, I will work for 7 years, but Rachel bitchatana for Rachel, your daughter, the younger one. Right, already there, Rashi tells us he was worried about Lavan's tricks. So he tried to avoid any misconception or misunderstanding. He said, I want Rachel, who's your daughter, don't give me another Rachel. And it's your daughter who's the younger daughter. Right, so he was quite specific, it didn't help him, he got tricked anyway. Yomer Lavan, and Lavan says, well, of course, what kind of question is that? Toiv titi oisalach, I'd better need to give it to you. They're giving her to another man. I'd rather keep it from the family. Shvoi modi, stay with me. Yaakov works for Rachel Sheva Shonim for 7 years. And it was just like a few days. But Avosoi serves, he has such great love for her. Yaakov, at the end, Yaakov says, Lavan, listen, Hovis Ishti, bring my wife. Kimola Yomer, my days are up, and let me have a relationship with her. He was getting on his ears. He was 84 at the time, Yaakov. And it was time to get the shidduch words. Huh? Yeah. 84. Your marriage was 84. 13 children here. Huh? Not bad. Yeah. But yes, so if Lavan is called Anshei Hamokim, Lavan gathers, he made a party. By Yask Mishan, he makes the chasana, he makes a party. Of course, we will know the story. Vahiba Erev, it was at the evening. Vayikach Leah takes Leah Bitoy. Vayava Esa Elovan, he brings Leah to Yaakov. Vayava Elovan, he had a relationship with her. Vitan Elovan, Zilpa Shechosa, he gives a Zilpa, the maidservant, Leah Bitoy Shechosa, etc. Vahiba Baikens in the morning, Vahinei Leah, behold, it's Leah, not Yaakov Rachel. Vayama Elovan says to Elovan, Mazoy Sicily, what did you do to me? Haloiva Rachel, Abazdimach, I work for Rachel, Varomer Misani, why did you trick me? Vayama Elovan says, Leah Osa Chain Bim Kameinu. I'm sorry, we don't do this over here. We don't marry off the younger daughter before the older daughter. So, sorry about that. Could have told him that before, but anyway. Malei Shavua Zois, I said, I have an eighth of you. Fill this week, celebrate this week. But Nitna Lacha Gam Zois Ba'avoy, then I'll give you the second daughter as well. Asher Tavari Mori, but you have to work for me again. Oit Shavua Shana Machairois, another 7 years. Only thing is, this time I'll give it to you on credit. In other words, I'll give you Rachel first, and then you work the 7 years. Ayas came. Yaakov did that by Malish Shavua Zois and 7 days. Ayitan Lois Rachel Bitoy Lois Isha, and he gave him Rachel, and he gave him maidservant, etc. Then it goes on to say that Yaakov loved Rachel. Hashem saw that Leah was somewhat hated. He made her children first. She gave birth to the Reuven, Shimon, Levi, etc. Rachel was barren. Only much, much later, Rachel has a daughter, a son called Yosef. So a few little things first before we go into the actual story. First of all, the interesting halachic thing, we know that the Gemara says that from this we actually learn two dinim from this story. Two halachas. One halacha is halacha of sheva brachas. Well, where do we know that when a chassan marries his kala, you have to have sheva brachas, you have to have 7 days of rejoicing? We learn it from here. It says 7 days rejoicing. The second interesting halacha we learn is that ein ma'arvin simcha b'simcha. You're not supposed to mix one celebration with another celebration. Lavan could have said, no problem, tomorrow night marry Rachel, and then we'll have a Shav Brachas together. Right? You're not supposed to do that. One simcha, supposed to finish the one simcha, then have another simcha. And for that, we learn lots of halachas, for example, it's a whole shaila where the person can get married on Chol HaMoed or Purim, because one simcha, another simcha. Sorry?
7 years.
No, you didn't wait 7 years. You waited 7 days. You worked for 7 years after that, but you waited 7 days. So he said, wait 7 days, I'll give you Rachel, and then work another 7 years. You could have said, I'll give you Rachel tomorrow, and then work another 7 days, right? But they waited the celebration, they celebrated for another, they finished the celebration of 7 days, and only then he married Rachel. Why? Because Ein Ma'arvin Simcha B'Simcha, we don't mix one Simcha to another. Why is that? Tosfos in Gemara says, because when you're celebrating a Simcha, you have to be focused on that Simcha, you have to have enough brain space to be focused on the celebration that you're celebrating, give it all your attention, and only then reserve your attention for a different simcha. There's an interesting discussion about this. We have a rule in halacha that we normally don't learn halachas from before the giving of the Torah to after giving of the Torah, right? Because the giving of the Torah, Matan Torah, was our defining moment. Everything changes from there. We don't actually don't learn. If we find certain halachas happening before Matan Torah, we don't learn halachas from there. In fact, even the mitzvahs that were given before Matan Torah, like Bris Milah and circumcision, these things had to be re-given at Matan Torah, right? The Rambam says, we don't keep the Bris Milah because Hashem commanded Avraham Avinu to do circumcision. We keep it because Hashem commanded Moshe Rabbeinu to do it, right? Our whole existence, our whole halachic focus is taken only from Matan Torah. So therefore the question is how can we learn this halacha? How come the source of not mixing one simcha to another comes from before Matan Torah? And the answer that's given is that it's before Matan Torah. The way it works is like this. The fact that we have Sheva Bracha is actually a rabbinic din. It doesn't actually come from the Torah. It's not a biblical din that you have to have Sheva Bracha, you have to have 7 days of simcha. It's a rabbinic thing. It's a mitzvah the Rabbanan to have Sheva Bracha. Now what? The only thing is that the Rabbanan found a support from the Torah, and that's the story of Sheva Brachas. In terms of the halacha of not mixing one simcha with another, so that's a type of halacha that you could learn from before Matan Torah. Why? We don't learn new halachas from before Matan Torah to after Matan Torah. But this is a halacha with a logic. It's a halacha which expresses the psyche, the psychological focus of a person. In other words, all the Torah is not giving a new mitzvah. The Torah is just revealing to us a fact that it's very difficult to concentrate on two simchas at one time. Right, and therefore they had to wait 1 week and then only celebrate a second week. So it's not a halacha we're learning from Matan Torah, we're learning the way the human mind works, that's all. From before Matan Torah, that it's difficult to concentrate on two things at once, and therefore we learn a halacha, one should concentrate on one simcha at a time.
But Laban wasn't even Jewish.
Correct, that's exactly the point. That's why we can learn the halacha. It's not a halacha. Because Laban understood it rationally, that you don't focus on one thing.
while
it's still two different people, still different symptoms. Yeah. Okay. Now, there is another halachic question. I want to go into the whole story properly, but just a couple of comments first. There's a famous halachic problem of how could Yaakov marry two sisters? Right? Famous question. Because we know that the Avos, Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, fulfilled and kept the whole Torah. And in the Torah, for a Jew, for a non-Jew it's permitted, but for a Jew it's prohibited to marry two sisters. Right?
While they're still alive.
Correct. So the famous question is, how could Yaakov marry two sisters? And there are many, many explanations. Some say that they only kept the Torah in Eretz Yisrael, not outside of Eretz Yisrael, which actually explains why when he got to Eretz Yisrael, Rachel passed away. Right? There's another explanation we'll get to in a minute. But there's also a halachic explanation that goes like this. There's a very famous question whether halachically the Avos Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov were halachically Jewish or just sort of symbolically Jewish. Right? I know that sounds like a strange question, right? But that's a very, very famous question. In fact, the consensus among most opinions is that they were not halachically Jewish. They were the ancestors of the Jewish nation. The ethnic group called Jews come from Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov and started with them, but they didn't have the halachic status of being Jewish. Before Matan Torah, the status of Jewishness comes from Matan Torah, when we converted to Judaism. We, in fact, in the Gemara in Yevamos learns many of the halachas of conversion from Matan Torah. Right. Now, this has huge ramification because if the Avos were not actually halachically Jewish, they just chose to keep the whole Torah. That would mean that their classification halachically was called Ben Noach. They were non-Jewish. Now, one thing that did, one group of people that were obligated to keep certain mitzvahs before the giving of the Torah were non-Jews. Mm-hmm. Non-Jews. Mm-hmm. The seven mitzvahs b'nei Noach, the seven Noachad laws, were given long time before Matan. They were given, six of them were given to Adam HaRishon, the seventh was given to Noach, right? That's what they call the seven mitzvahs b'nei Noach, right? Which means that anyone before Matan Torah, whether you chose to keep the 630 mitzvahs or not, your primary obligation would be to the seven Noachad laws rather than the Torah, correct? Which meant the following. That Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov would have had to keep halachically the seven Noachad laws and then chose to keep the mitzvahs as well. But if there would ever be a conflict between the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach and the Mitzvahs of the Torah, halachically they would be obligated to keep the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach over keeping the Torah. Correct? But override. Okay? Which, by the way, is one of the explanations, not according to everyone, but it's one of the explanations of why Avraham Avinu, who kept the whole Torah, didn't circumcise himself until he was told to. Why did he wait? He kept the entire Torah. Why didn't he circumcise himself as well? One of the many, many answers. One of the answers that are given is this: that at the end of Noach was given a mitzvah. Noach was given a mitzvah that he can eat meat. But he was told then that he may not eat a piece of meat live off an animal. And it was re-emphasized that although you can kill an animal, but you cannot kill a human being, right? Because murder is one of the seven Noach laws. But in the expression of the pasuk when Noach is instructed not to murder, Hashem says, but your blood you may not spill. And many halachic authorities will say that included in the mitzvah of murder for a non-Jew, included in that is the prohibition of self-injury. Okay, you're not allowed to injure yourself. Which, by the way, is halacha. One is up, but it's injured themselves, right? Unless there's a particular reason for a surgery, whatever the case is. Which is the whole basis of the whole shaila of cosmetic surgery, whether one is allowed to do that or not, because it's just injuring yourself for without medical reason, whatever. It's a very, very complicated area, right? So, one of the Noachad laws, according to some opinions, is that one may not injure oneself. Therefore, Avraham Avinu had this dilemma. He was not commanded to do a bris milah. He wanted to do a bris milah. He wanted to do circumcision. The problem is that he couldn't do circumcision because that conflicted with the halacha of B'nai Noach to injure him. Bris milah means self-injury. And he wouldn't be allowed to do that. So therefore the prohibition of self-injury overrode the mitzvah of bris milah until Hashem came and specifically instructed him to do the mitzvah. Correct? Similarly here, there's a big machlokes, a big dispute among the poskim, among the mafarshim of the Gemara, of how broad the seven Noachad laws are. But according to many, Noachad laws are not just the seven mitzvahs. They actually have quite a lot of extension to them. One of the extensions, for example, is that it's obligatory on every society to develop a structure, to develop laws, to develop a system, and for people to abide by that system. Right? It's called dinim. It's one of the seven mitzvot of Noach. They have to make a court system, they have to make a constitution, they have to make legislation, that there should be a functioning society. And that brought to a very interesting dilemma that Yaakov had. Yaakov promises Rachel that he's going to marry her. Promising someone you're going to do something is not a mitzvah from the Torah. It comes under the Shem Mitzvah B'nai Noach. It's part of society's morality. It's part of basic morality. So therefore, Yaakov is now obligated to marry Rachel. Yet there's a society law in Lavan's country that you don't marry the younger before the older. So he ends up marrying Leah first, which is also part of his Noachar obligation. But nevertheless, he still has to marry Rachel, because he made a promise to her to marry her. So it came out that all of a sudden Yaakov is now obligated to marry Rachel and Leah under the structure of Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. You follow? So therefore, because of Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach, he has to marry Rachel and Leah, he's not able to break that. That overrides the Torah prohibition of marrying two sisters, which is a prohibition that does not apply to a non-Jew, only applies to a Jew. Yaakov has no choice, he has to marry them because it overrides the Taryag mitzvahs.
Why does he have to marry Rachel according to the Noahide law?
Because part of Noahide law is also based on morality. You make a promise, many people say that, if you make a nether, that vows, for example, vows are part of the Shem Mitzvah Noah, because it's part of basic morality. Uh-huh. It's part of basic social interaction, it's part of the Noahide structure. He already promised to marry her.
How many wives did
Lavan
have?
Lavan? I mean Yaakov. I don't know.
They were two different
brothers. Oh, excuse me. No, apparently they weren't. No, some say they were even twins, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then you spoke earlier about oaths. So, what is the difference between an oath, and how do we handle oaths today, and the promise to marry Rachel?
So, a promise and an oath is different. First one, oath means when you actually swear by Hashem's name. We don't do that today. It was done in the time of the base team when we make witnesses swear. It's a very, very serious thing to swear, even honestly, how much more so to swear falsely. Therefore, today in a Jewish court, for example, they will not ask someone to swear. It's just not done anymore. in case the person swears falsely, and it's a terrible, terrible thing. However, there's a basic responsibility when you promise something, someone to someone, when you commit yourself to something. There's a separate mitzvah in the Torah that when you commit yourself to something, you have to keep to it. And many, many poskim say that would even be true for a non-Jew, which is why Yaakov was obligated to marry her.
So when you take, when you go to the ceremony here and they ask you to either swear or not to swear, what?
You have to not to swear. You have to choose not swearing. You have to actually, you can swear or confirm or something, or affirm, or I don't know what it's called exactly. Much better not to swear. You have to actually take the option of affirming or pledging or whatever. I don't know what they call it.
In other words, don't use that term.
Yeah, to you, because they use God's name and help me, whatever they call it,
yeah.
And all this kind of stuff, right? So
you shouldn't actually use it.
Yeah. Okay, so that's just a couple of halachic things in this whole story. But on a deeper level, this story is very confusing. First of all, what does it mean? Why would the Torah tell us, it says, Laban had two daughters? Right? And what's the difference between the two daughters, says the Torah? That Leah seemed a bit of a complicated individual, but secretive. Her eyes were tender, she was teary-eyed. Rachel was the beautiful one. And then it says, Yaakov loved Rachel. And so he wanted to marry Rachel. I mean, what is this? We're talking about Yaakov here. Right? First of all, why would the Torah do that anyways? Why would the Torah highlight Leah's imperfections, right? And then go on to talk about how Yaakov favored Rachel over Leah because of Leah's imperfections. What does that mean? And when he ends up marrying Leah, he was obligated to marry poor Leah. She gets like a rough deal, so it seems. It says later on in the Torah, "Vayar Hashem ki sunua Leah." Hashem saw that Leah was hated. It's a harsh, harsh expression, right? And yet we're not talking about your average guy who's just a regular person. We're talking about Yaakov Avinu. We're talking about Yaakov, who was the Bechir Shavavos. He was considered the choicest of Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov, an unbelievable tzaddik. So there's still got to be something more to this whole story of Rachel and Leah. And why, there's got to be more to the story about why Yaakov wanted to marry Rachel and why Hashem made him marry Leah first, right? That's because, well, obviously it was all from Hashem. And why did it all happen? So I'm going to share with you a deep idea, a Kabbalistic idea, that goes like this. In Kabbalah it says that Leah and Rachel represent two worlds, two concepts. And it's spoken about in different ways. Some places it says that Leah represents thought and Rachel represents speech. To take it a bit deeper, we learn in Kabbalah that there's two types of existences. There's what we call Alma de Iskasia, the Alma de Iskalia, the hidden worlds, the hidden realities, and the revealed realities. Hidden realities means those worlds, those levels, those concepts that are hidden from us. They're lofty, they're tucked away, they're secretive, they don't relate to the human being. Alma di Isgalia, the revealed worlds, means those existences, those experiences, those worlds, those concepts that are more revealed, that are able to relate to us, that communicate to us, that talk to us. Saying it a bit differently, Leah represents how things are still in potential, in a more spiritual state. Rachel refers to how things come down and evolve and descend into a more practical, tangible, revealed state. You know, it's interesting that on Rosh Hashanah, there's 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, correct? And this 2 days of Rosh Hashanah is all over in Eretz Yisrael as well. And in Kabbalah, there's a lot talked about what's the difference between the first day and the second day. Like, why do we need 2 days of Yom Hadin? You know, why can't we fix up what we need to fix up on the first day? So it says that the din of Hashem and the brachas of Hashem and Hashem's decision comes in 2 stages. The first day it comes down in a more spiritual way, in a more potential way. The second day it comes in a more practical way. That's why it says the first day of Rosh Hashanah, the judgment is more about spirituality. The second day of Rosh Hashanah, the judgment is more about our physical needs. And therefore it says that the first day of Rosh Hashanah corresponds to Leah, the second day of Rosh Hashanah corresponds to Rachel. Which, by the way, a fascinating thing, explains a very interesting minhag on Rosh Hashanah. Most people have a minhag that the things, that the special foods that we eat only eat on the first night, not the second night. Some people eat the second night also, but most people only eat them in the first night. Why? Because we know that the first things that we eat, those things that we eat, are called simanim, right? Codes, signs, the carrot, the honey, the apple, the pomegranate, etc. We know that when Yaakov was going to marry Rachel, he gave her codes, he gave her simanim. And because he was worried about Lavan tricking him, so he gave Rachel codes, certain mitzvahs that belonged to women that he was going to ask her about. And because it was going to be late at night, it was going to be dark, of course, Rachel was going to come in all veiled, and we wouldn't be sure exactly who it is. So he was going to ask her for the codes. And at the last minute, Rachel saw Leah being taken in, right? And Leah was going to be completely humiliated because Yaakov was going to ask her for the codes and she wouldn't have them. And Rachel at the last moment gave up the codes. It says she gave Masra Simanim LeRachel, LeLeamin. She gave the codes to Leah in an act of incredible self-sacrifice because she had no idea that the week later she'd also marry Yaakov. Right? But she thought she was giving up Yaakov forever. And she gave away the Simanim to Leah. And that's one of the things that we mention on Rosh Hashanah. We ask Hashem to have mercy upon us in the merit of Rachel who gave away the Simanim. So because Rachel gave the Simanim away to Leah, we only eat the Simanim on the first night, because the first night is Leah. Because the second night is Rachel. Rachel didn't have the Simanim anymore. She gave it away to Leah. Right? And that's one of our Simanim. That's one of the reasons that we eat it on the first night, to show Hashem, look what happened. The Simanim were given away from Rachel to Leah. You have to save us also, and that's chus. It was an incredible Mesiras Nefesh. Right? So we eat it on the first night, and we don't eat it on the second night, to mention the schus of Rachel that she gave away the siman. Okay, that's why the after of the second day of Rosh Hashanah we mentioned Rachel, etc. Now let's develop this a little bit further. And I'm going to share with you a deep concept that goes like this. We know the name of Hashem has four letters to it, correct? Yud and Hey, and Vav and Hey. And it's brought down that the Yud and the Hey and the Vav and the Hey of Hashem's name correspond to the structure of how godliness descends into the world and the structure of how our own neshama works. Because we've spoken about many, many times that a person is structured with different levels of powers. The intellectual power, the emotional power, and the power to implement, right? How does it work mainly? The way it works is that a process, any experience that we have works through a process. The process works like this. It begins with Chochmah, right? Remember the 10 powers, Chochmah, Bina, Daat, etc., right? It begins with Chochmah. What is Chochmah? Chochmah is the creation of an idea. Chochmah is that conception. It's the first, the highest level, right? Bina is then how that idea is internalized, developed, nurtured. The word Bina comes from Binyan, it's a building, an intellectual structure. The idea is nurtured, the idea is developed, it's given breadth, depth, etc. Right? And that's the idea of Chochmah and Binah. So every idea that we begin with, intellectually, it starts with a spark, it starts with a thought. In fact, the word Chochmah is broken up into two words, Koach Ma. It's a power, but it's nothing yet. Ma, what is it? It's like not even developed yet, it's just a spark, but it's the initial spark of truth, which then needs to be developed and nurtured. Right? That's why Chochmah is masculine, Bina is feminine. The Gemara says, Bina Yaseira Nitna Be'isha. A woman is given extra sense of Bina, the power to develop something, the power to see it through, try to build it, to nurture it, right? And that's why Chochmah Bina is called father and mother. We have Chochmah Bina Das. Das is what keeps them Chochmah Bina together. And through Chochmah Bina, the proper process of Chochmah Bina, we then give birth to the emotion. When you think about something properly and you develop proper emotion to it, a proper intellectual structure, it then gives birth to feeling, emotions, right? How many emotions are there? There are six. Chesed, Gvura, Tiferes, Netzach, Hoyd, and Yesod. Right? That's our emotional. Then, the last leg, the last stage of the experience is, you know, sometimes, the way it works like this. Let's take, for example, a person's connection to Hashem. Right? A person's relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it says that the Chochmah of the soul is that spark of truth that we all have, right? Every Jew can tap into the spark of truth that we have within our neshama. That's the Chochmah of the neshama, that idea that Hashem exists. But it's not enough just to have that idea in the way of a munah of one small spark. We have to develop it. We have to think about it. So we learn about Hashem. We develop a whole intellectual structure. We learn Torah. We absorb. We understand the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, etc. But that's not enough just to understand intellectually. We have to develop a passion for it. We have to develop feeling. So we develop, through the Chokhmah Minna, we develop an emotional connection with Hashem. But we know sometimes that a person can be so fired up about something, so passionate about something, and not only does he think about it, but he even feels it. A person can have an amazing emotional pull to chesed, for example. He wants to do kindness. He thinks it's an amazing idea. He understands its greatness. He wants to do it, but somehow cannot implement it. It's all in potential. Cannot follow it through. Cannot communicate it to someone else. Ever had this idea where you feel something so strongly, but you lack the power of communicating it to someone else? Implementing it. Revealing it into a different world. That's that last step, that tenth power of the soul called Malchus. Right? Malchus is that power, it's called leadership, implementation, to follow something through till the very end, to reveal it to a different reality. That's why it's like a melech, like a king who leads the country. Okay? I'm saying it very briefly, but I want to just get the basic idea. These four stages are the four letters of Hashem's name, Yud, K, and Vav, K. Yud is Chochmah, that's why it's just a dot. Right? It's the initial conception, initial idea, the truth, the power, the intense initial conception, the creation of the concept. Hey, the first hey is the broadening of the concept. The first hey belongs to Bina. Vav, the third letter of Hashem's name, Vav is the six. Vav is Gematria of six. Vav is the six midas, the six emotional levels. And then finally we have the last hey. Hey is again the broadening out of Malchus. It's the broadening out of the idea of implementing it. And it's the lower level of hey. That's the concept of Malchus. Now, Yaakov is made up of two words, Yud and Ekev. What was Yaakov's mission? Yaakov was going to give birth to Klal Yisrael. What is the mission of Yaakov? What Yaakov wanted to do was to take the Yud, meaning the highest levels of spirituality, his connection to Hashem at the very original creation level, the most intense part of the spiritual levels, which is the Yud, and bring it all the way down to Ekev, reveal it in the world, transform the world, implement it into the physicality of the world. You see? That's the mission of Klal Yisrael, to transform Choron, to bring Elokus, to bring godliness all the way, that it's implemented and it's revealed, and it transforms and elevates the physical world. He wanted to take the Yud and bring it down to Ekev. Ekev is the heel, to bring it down to the lowest levels. That's what Yaakov wanted to do. So what does he do? He wants to go straight to Rachel. Vayeav Yaakov is Rachel. Yaakov loves Rachel. Because Rachel is the purpose. Rachel is about the revealed world. Rachel is about implementation. Rachel is the last letter of Hashem's name. It says the second hey is Rachel. First hey is Leah, we'll soon explain that. Second hey is Rachel. Rachel is about taking it all the way down to be revealed, to reveal Hashem's kingdom in the world. That's Rachel. So, Vayeav Yaakov's Rachel, Yaakov loves Rachel, because that's what he wants to do. That's the mission, that's the purpose of creation. That's why, by the way, Leah and Rachel were different. Hashem is not disparaging about Leah. The Einei Leah Rakos, the eyes of Leah were tender, meaning she was mysterious, she was not a communicator, she was reserved, she was withdrawn, because Leah represents the hidden levels, the potential levels, the spiritual levels. What is Leah? Leah is the Hey and the Vav. It says Yaakov is Chochmah and Leah is Bina. Leah is the feminine side of Chochmah. She takes the idea and nurtures it, the concept, but it's still a concept. It's Bina. And then the concept gives birth to emotion. That's the Vav, the six Midas. Leah had six boys. Reuben, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar, Zvulun refer to the six Midas, Kabbalistically. Right? That's Leah. That's why Leah was a hidden, mysterious world. It's more things happen more in the spiritual, in the potential, in the esoteric, in the hidden reality, not in the open, physical, open reality. So Yaakov goes straight to Rachel. Yaakov is Rachel, because that's the purpose, that's the mission of existence, to reveal it, to communicate it. Rachel was beautiful. What does it mean, beautiful? She had a sphere of influence. She could communicate. She was about revealing things. But Hashem says to Yaakov, it doesn't work that way. You can't go straight from the Chochmah all the way to the Malchus. There's a process. There's a process. You've got to take the highest level of spirituality, and it's a process of evolution. You've got to marry Leah first. The concept has to be developed, first has to be revealed on an intellectual level. It's got to be spiritualized, it's got to become a spiritual reality first. Not just a potential spirituality, but a real spirituality. You've got to then develop an emotional structure, you've got to have... In a person's life, it's the same way. You cannot just take the emunah and go straight out into the world. You've got to daven, you've got to learn, you've got to involve yourself in spirituality first. That's, you've got to involve yourself in the layer part of existence. When you fully develop the layer structure, and you've gotten up in the morning, and you've learned Torah, and you've davened, and you feel fired up, and you emotionally connected with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then you have the power to go out into the world and be a Rachel. Then you have the power to reveal Hashem into the world. But first you have to go through the layer. So yes, the ultimate desire, the love, the mission is Rachel. But you've got to marry Leah first and have the six boys, and then Rachel can work. That's why Rachel eventually gives birth after Leah's given birth, after Dafka, after Rachel's given birth to Yosef. Yosef was a symbol of this concept. What was the difference between the six brothers and Yosef? The rest of the brothers were detached from the physical. They were shepherds. They didn't involve themselves in Mitzrayim. Even when they got to Mitzrayim, they lived in Goshen. They were always detached. They represented the spirituality of life. The Kohanim and the Levim come from them. But even the rest of the brothers, they were detached. They were always away from the hustle and bustle and the mundaneness of existence. Who is Yosef? Yosef is the only one. Yosef is the child of Rachel. He's the one that's able to go down into Mitzrayim and still be Yosef HaTzadik. When can that happen? Only after Leah has her six boys. First you got the whole structure. So the Yud has to develop in the Hay, they have to give birth to the Vav, and then you can have the last day. That's why Hashem made it, that yes, Vayehav Yaakov is Rachel. Yaakov marries Rachel, he loves Rachel, but he's going to marry Leah first. Incidentally, that's why also Rachel is the mother of Golos. Right? Rachel dies before Yaakov gets to Eretz Yisrael. So Eretz Yisrael is a place of Kedusha. It's a place of Leah. Right? Rachel is the one to take Hashem into the Golos, into the lowest forms. The ultimate purpose of Yud Eker, bringing the Yud into the heel, that's done by Rachel. And that's why, who comes with us in the Golos, who comes with us that we can bring Hashem even into the distant lands, even into the diaspora, that's Rachel. That's why Rachel is the mother of Golos. That's why Rachel Imenu is buried on the side, etc., etc. Okay?